Welcome to Double Take with Matt and Jake. This is Jake. Matt is actually at a wedding right now we live in different states, so I didn't make it. But he's going to be joining us for the second half of the show. But for the first half, we're joined by a special guest, Paige Kuhn from Bleacher Report. Paige, we finally got connected. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. So, like I said, Paige is a college basketball writer for Bleacher Report. Do you want to introduce yourself better than I just did?
Yeah, I've been at Bleacher Report for 4.5 years. I've pretty much done a lot of different jobs there, bounced around a couple places, and now I'm actually the associate editor for college football and basketball, which means I work with our national college football writers and basketball writers throughout the year and kind of plan content around college sports.
Sweet. So how did you get into that? You went to the University of Arizona. Did you study journalism there, or how did you get into Bleacher Report?
Yes, I went to the University of Arizona and went into journalism. Always knew I wanted to work in sports and tried to get involved any way possible with that athletic department and got my foot in the door there and kind of got some really great experience just because of the level of talent that kind of came through there when I was there. When I graduated, I was actually on Twitter and saw a post, and I was moving back to the Bay Area and saw that Bleacher Report was hiring and applied, and the rest is kind of history.
Cool. So what, you grew up in the Bay Area, so are you a Bay Area sports fan? Like, were you disappointed at a Warriors game last week, or are you more Arizona stuff?
No, so actually, I was a Clippers fan for a while because I love college hoops, and in high school, when I was like a senior, Blake Griffin was drafted by the Clippers, and so I just like became like a bandwagon Clippers fan. My whole family are Warriors fans, so the last couple of years has been a little brutal for me, but obviously Steve Kerr is an Arizona guy, Bruce Frazier, Andre Iguodala, so I was definitely pulling for them just because of the Arizona ties there, but my heart definitely lies with the Arizona fan base, more so than the Bay Area for basketball specifically.
Yeah, and then so Arizona hoops, if I'm not mistaken, you were in school for those two Elite Eight losses to Wisconsin, right? Yeah, so the person I sit next to at work is a Wisconsin. She went to Wisconsin. She like talks about those games all the time. So I just feel so bad. That'd be so frustrating if I were a U of A fan. Like, you guys were so, not to rub it in or keep bringing it up, but you were so close.
Yeah, I think that team specifically just kind of hurt because we lost a player earlier in the year, Brandon Ashley. And I think if we would have had him, it would have made a huge difference for us, but unfortunately that just didn't work out, and it's tough because I think Sean Miller deserves the Final Four and the credit for all those things, but now it's just been even more tough, but you know, we get through it as Arizona fans, and we're lucky to have watched some serious talent on this team too.
Yeah, so we don't have to get super in, we're kind of hopping all over the place, but Sean Miller has been in the middle of, you know, the whole like lawsuit or investigation, I guess, more appropriate. And he kind of came off looking better than a lot of people thought he did. And I know you were pretty big Sean Miller advocate. I follow you on Twitter. I don't know, did you know he was pretty innocent, or were you shocked, or what was your conclusion, I guess, with that investigation?
Bad things. Same with Book Richardson, who just received his sentence. And anytime that I cross paths with either of them working in the athletic department, they came across as stand-up individuals. Like you said, I am very much a Sean Miller advocate because I think, you know, I studied journalism in school, and some of the first things I learned. You take an entire course on ethics, and I think, you know, trying to put the Homer aside, like, some of the things just didn't make sense and didn't add up, and a lot of national outlets have come out and said, you know, we all have the same sources and kind of didn't ever get that $100,000 rumor coming up. And also, my biggest thing is that, you know, if Sean Miller did, in fact, do some of the things that have been reported about him, he probably would have been arrested by now by the FBI. So I think all in all, I think there's some truth to it, maybe. You know, you never know. But I also think, you know, it's part of the flawed system that is the NCAA. But I think, you know, Arizona fans are definitely going to back Sean Miller until, like, some real proof comes out, and that's just how we are. But I also think, too, like, some of the things that were just thrown out there, and, you know, like, one tweet sends everyone into a spiral, and that news becomes fact almost. And so, and it hurt us. We lost some recruits, and that's unfortunate because there was no, so far, there has been no, like, concrete facts to any of that. And like I said, if there is, then, you know, we pay the price for it. But I am a little nervous about the NCAA sanctions. Apparently, six schools are going to be informed that they have some serious sanctions, like co-season ban and scholarship loss. So a little nervous and waiting that one out. But I think overall, like our school has said that they're going to keep their faith in Sean until that happens. And I think the Arizona fan base and myself specifically are definitely going to support him for a long time until something really concrete comes out.
Yeah, no, my favorite thing about Sean Miller is when he takes his jacket off, if you're playing like UCLA, you're in the Pac-12 tournament, just sweaty as can be. He gets into it.
He does.
Which is good.
He's
passionate.
Good guys.
Yeah, no, so good for him. Let's shift to football a little bit because I'm more of a football guy. First of all, I think U of A Stadium's underrated. I think it's a really cool stadium that y'all have down there.
Yeah, it's actually really nice. They've done a lot of work down there, especially we just opened a new training facility that's indoor, which is super great for football. I was a huge Kevin Sumlin fan when he was at Texas A&M, and was really excited that he got the opportunity to come down here. I was hoping for Lane Kiffin, but that's okay. I think Arizona football's on the right track. I still think we're definitely a basketball school, of course, but I love college football outside of just Arizona stuff, because that's mainly the sports that I cover and focus on with my current job.
Yeah, well, that was my next question, actually. What are your thoughts on Kevin Sumlin over Rich Rod? So you're pro Kevin Sumlin. I think he's been doing good. I think he's will you tell me what you think about him? How about that?
So I think one of the biggest problems in college football with college football fan bases are we don't give guys enough time to make things happen. I think that can be said about Taggart, Florida State. I mean, people expect it to happen overnight. Rich Rod was fantastic. Unfortunately, his personal issues caused him not to be our coaching longer. I think he did a fine job while he was there. But I think Kevin Sumlin is just going to take time. He needs to be able to recruit his guys. I think having Khalil Tate healthy will definitely help. I think there needs to be open lines of communication in terms of that offense and how to use him. I think defensively, I'm hoping we can recruit and get people in there and, you know, be known for that. But, I mean, obviously Kevin Sumlin being there is definitely going to be more so towards an explosive offense. So I'm hoping that just that happens this year and then the defense will follow.
Yeah, I think I'm excited about Grant Gunnell, your guys' recruit coming in this year out of Texas. I liked his high school film, so I think he's going to be good. As far as, you know, college football overall, what are your – I'm a big Pac-12 guy. I'm from Salt Lake City, so grew up a Utah fan. Actually went to BYU, but that's a different story. Do you what are your thoughts? I think it's pretty much Washington's got it on lockdown still, even though they lost Jake Browning. Do you think anybody else has a shot at that conference this year?
Not really. And what's funny is like people obviously think that Washington's going to be obviously go to USC to mix. They have a what they think is a decent quarterback, but I think they've had decent guys for a while, and they still can't seem to put it together. And I also just don't think that Helton is going to get a job done for them. And I don't think Chip Kelly has done anything to really help UCLA. I do think Utah is going to be very, very good. I'm not just saying that. I do think they're going to be fantastic. They're always tough for us to play. I think you guys beat us like 1,000 last year. But yeah, Washington, I mean, Peterson has just done such a fantastic job there, and it's like I feel bad because they're underrated because they're in the Pac-12, and if they lose a single game, it's held against them because the Pac-12 is not seen as a very respected conference, and I'm sure UCF fans will say, you know, it's the match not being in a Power 5, but it's almost like it's similar to that, because if even being a conference champion is not necessarily enough, in the Pac-12, where you have to win out, really.
Yeah, Matt and I talk about, it might not be like the top teams like in the SEC that has Alabama, but I think the Pac-12 outside of like Oregon State, you can lose to anybody any week. Like last year, you guys beat Oregon by like 20-something, I think, and it really wasn't that surprising just because that's how the Pac-12 works.
Yeah, I enjoy beating Oregon more than anyone, actually. Yeah. Arizona fans will say, I think that's actually the truth for most of the Pac-12. Beating Oregon is always just really fun. I think it's tough because people don't stay up late enough to watch those games, and they can be exciting and extremely weird. We also always have Friday night games that just are so bizarre. Some of the craziest Friday night games I've ever seen have come from the Pac-12. But I wish people would stay up later, but that's also a conference thing, and that starts with our guy, Larry Scott. I'm not sure he's willing to make the moves he needs to get us some better play there.
Yeah, you know, he's interesting for sure, Larry Scott. What about outside of the Pac-12? We'll do one more football question. Who's your favorite program to watch? This can be, I don't know if you like their coach or you like watching their offense or you think they got a good running back, whatever this year, but outside of the Pac-12, what's your most entertaining program?
Gosh, that's a tough one. I'm trying to think of a team that's like outside. I mean, obviously outside of Clemson and Alabama, because I feel like those are the very obvious picks. I mean, actually, Alabama's kind of boring to watch, to be honest with you. I love their running back, Najee Harris. He's a Bay Area guy, so big fan of him. But Clemson is fantastic to watch. Trevor Lawrence is like watching somebody walk on water. It's amazing. I mean, probably Oklahoma, unfortunately, because of, you know, Baker and Kyler. I'm also an Oakland A's fan, so Kyler stung me pretty bad, but he was fun to watch, and I think there are a lot of underrated, like, games and players in the Big 12. Maybe it's just because I don't like defense. Maybe it's because I love offense, and the Big 12 is fun for me to watch. But, yeah, I would probably go with Oklahoma on that one.
Yeah, no, I think, honestly, the Oklahoma schools, Oklahoma State, too, like, that Oklahoma-Oklahoma State game is always, like, 60-57 or something like that, so...
Yeah, and even Texas, Oklahoma is always fun to watch. I mean, one of them came out to a field goal. Like, it's just those rivalries. I feel like there's a ton of them in the Big 12. Like, they have more than just one.
Yeah, no, and that Baker Mayfield and Kyler Murray, they've had two incredible quarterbacks. Lincoln Riley's had, like, the most luck as far as quarterbacks coming in his first couple years as a head coach. So I'm excited to see what he does with Jalen Hurts. Paige, I told you 15 minutes, so we're almost up. One quick question. We talked about this. I always find it interesting. We've had, on our show, we've had Jessica Smetana from Sports Illustrated. We've had a couple other female sports broadcasters. I told you, I'm a big fan of Laura Rutledge and Maria Taylor at ESPN. I just want to ask you, you know, have you seen any issues, or has it been pretty good at Bleacher Report, like being a woman in a, you know, stereotypically male field? What's that been like for you?
Yeah, I mean, no issues. I think really when I was in college, I was trying to do as much as I possibly could, and I was, you know, working as like a sideline reporter and then also helping in our communications department, and you meet a lot of different people, and, you know, because you're young and female, obviously people, you know, question your intentions or, you know, will kind of scoff at the idea of you making it in this, quote, business. And I think one of the biggest things for me is that I've always just, my parents have taught me this. They're like, hey, just be yourself and, like, don't go in it, like, with a defensive attitude, because I think that sometimes cannot be really received well. It's just going into it with, like, hey, this is what I bring to the table, and being confident in that, but also being open to learning. That's something that, like, Bleacher Report's taught me a lot, is that, like, I came in and I started, you know, with the newsletter team. I was sending newsletter emails, and, like, I learned so much from doing that job about teams that I didn't know about. I mean, and then I switched into doing, like, breaking news alerts for Bleacher Report, and, like, I started covering NASCAR. Like, I knew nothing about NASCAR. So I think, like, just in general, I think, one, you go into it just, like, having confidence in yourself and not really making it about you being, like, a female or anything different than anyone else. You're just someone who's super passionate about sports and wants to work in it. But also just, like, going into it and being like, hey, I'm going to work hard at whatever you give me, and that's my way of proving myself, as opposed to using a lot of lip service and being like, you know, hey, I'm good at this, you know, just show them, as opposed to just saying it.
Yeah, definitely. No, that makes sense. I was, like, hearing about that, and really appreciate having you on. Again, so this is Paige Kuhn, editor at Bleacher Report. Her Twitter is at That Sports Paige. She's hilarious, so give her a follow. Yeah. Again,
I appreciate that.
Yeah, and then any last words for the good folks listening, Paige?
No, thank you very much for having me. Bear down and go Cats.
Go Cats. Well, appreciate you coming on. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Matt will give us a wedding update. We're going to talk some Copa America soccer and also the Women's World Cup as well. So we'll be right back. Welcome back to Double Take with Matt and Jake. Matt is back from the wedding. Matt, how was Tanner's wedding? I missed it.
It was good. It was nice. That good that pizza. That some pretty good cake. I'm not sure. I had to leave a little bit early, so I'm not sure if they actually cut the cake, but they were serving these kind of brownie type things that were pretty good. So yeah, Monica seems like a nice girl, so welcome to the family. Should be good.
Cool. Well, Paige was dope. So when you listen to the episode, she had a really good interview, so it was really big thanks for her coming on. Really appreciate it. Again, she's from Bleacher Report, the editor for college football, college basketball there. So big thanks to her. Now that Matt's back, we're going to talk, I think I said we're going to talk soccer, but we're actually, some crazy stuff happened in the NBA today. So we're going to do soccer next week because the group stages will mostly be over for the Women's World Cup as well as the Copa America. And we're going to talk Anthony Davis trade today, Mike Conley trade today, and the mess that is the Boston Celtics, which was my favorite part of life right now, is what's happening with the Celtics. Matt, any particular place you want to start out of those three?
I think we got to start with Mike Conley.
Yeah, so here's what happened. So today, June 19th, the Grizzlies traded Mike Conley to the Utah Jazz for Jay Crowder, Grayson Allen, Kyle Korver, the 23rd pick in this year's draft, and a future first-round pick. And the details on the future first-round pick are a bit complicated. But basically, it's going to probably happen in 2020 or 2021, I think. Matt, my initial reaction was, you know, I'm worried because Conley's 32 and he's got 2 years left on his deal. So it seems like a lot to give up. But second reaction, once I kind of let it settle, was the Rudy Gobert, he's about to get a Supermax, or he's eligible for a Supermax at least. Donovan Mitchell's almost off his rookie deal. So you kind of got to go for it right now, even if I would have preferred Russell timeline-wise better, D'Angelo Russell, that is. But you know, it's not a for sure thing you're going to get D'Angelo Russell. You got to go for it. So in that sense, especially with the Warriors the way they are, the West is as open as it's been since 2014 or 2015. So Utah's going for it.
Yeah, no, and I mean, they should be. Like, this is the first time that it's really been open to win a championship, you know, really probably since LeBron went to the Heat. Like, I know LeBron lost a couple of those years, but I mean, it's just been so, it's like LeBron or maybe one or two other teams. Next year, I mean, there's really no clear favorite, particularly if Kawhi ends up going to the Clippers or any other team that isn't the Raptors. If he stays, I think the Raptors are still the favorite, but I don't think anybody watched that series thinks that they're unbeatable, although they're certainly very, very good.
Well, they were one double overtime game in game three away from losing that Milwaukee series and a few bounces away and losing an overtime away from the Philadelphia series. So they almost lost twice in the Eastern Conference playoffs before winning the championship.
Right. And yeah, by the way, like Philadelphia might be worse too, because Tobias Harris, it kind of sounds like Tobias Harris is going to leave right now. I mean, that could certainly change, but right now that's what people seem to think. I think Jimmy Butler's more likely to stay, but they're not totally set in that. And I actually, I don't love this Mike Conley thing, but I definitely like it a lot. I think Dennis Lindsay seems to like Mike Conley better than D'Angelo Russell, and he certainly knows basketball a lot better than I do, so I'm going to take him for that. And then the other thing is, I feel like if the Jazz had a good chance of signing D'Angelo Russell in free agency, like I feel like you need to be 100% certain that you're going to get D'Angelo Russell to not do this Mike Conley trade. And clearly, they weren't 100% sure that he was coming, so you just got to do it, because if you miss out on Mike Conley and D'Angelo Russell, you may have just thrown away all of this work that you've done. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because, again, we mentioned salary-wise, this is maybe one or two more years of the Jazz being in a good cap situation. And also, the thing with D'Angelo Russell, he is a restricted free agent, but Brooklyn is considered the favorite, and they're considering – they think they got Kyrie. So they're leaning towards decline, like not – re-signing D'Angelo Russell. And I just want to say, Matt, we said that in like April that Kyrie could go to Brooklyn.
We did say that.
So shout out to us. I can't believe that actually is going to happen. Like, cause I, in my head, I was like, you know, no one's really talking about it, but Brooklyn just makes so much sense for Kyrie.
It does make so much sense. And it's a little bit weird. Like you would think that, you know, now the KD is going to have to sit out a whole year, that's less certain than it was. And we were talking about it. But the Celtics are just such a dumpster fire, which we're going to get to. So that doesn't seem likely. Let me say this. How do you feel about what we traded away? How do you feel about the picks? Jay Crowder
is a good on ball defender. He's a bad shooter. Kyle Korver is maybe going to retire, so I think he'll probably retire. You know, if he plays one more season, I don't think it'll be in Memphis. So I'm okay on that, but he is a shooter. Grayson Allen, you know, he flashed but didn't really have a good rookie year. The 23rd pick, you know, is not really going to come in and contribute a whole lot. So really, really the dagger for me is that future first-round pick. Because, and here's the reason, like the way it's set up, it might not convey until 2022. And that's the year that high school kids might be eligible to go into the draft. So if that's true, you'd have like a double draft with all the high school kids plus all those one and done players. So it's hypothetically be an incredibly deep draft. And we wouldn't have Utah wouldn't have their first round pick for that. But also thinking about the trade, like would I rather have Mike Conley or the shot at a high school kid in 2022? You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. And you know, to your point, like I don't really care about losing the first round pick this year because I think it's a particularly not good draft class, but B, I just feel you don't get a lot of good players in the 20s. You know, really, you know, once you pass 15. It's hard to find really good players. So that's not too much of a bummer. The thing that I think you have to look at, though, is like Kyle Korver, we needed him. Like we got a lot better once we did get him because of that shot making. And, you know, Jay Crowder, like you said, he's a good defender, which we're going to miss, but I think we'll be okay. But he did have games where he'd make five or six threes. And so we need to replace those guys. And Jay Crowder, he was playing like 30, 35 minutes a game. So now I think it's become very, very important for the Jazz that they can use their mid-level exemption to get somebody some sort of a stretch four. Do you think Harrison Barnes would sign with the Jazz for a mid-level exemption?
No, I don't think so, because he opted out of $25 million. So I know,
yeah. That was pretty sarcastic.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, well, I was going to say, because George Hill did it. It's not that drastic, but George Hill's agent screwed him last time he was in free agency, so maybe. Maybe yeah, you never know.
So,
the list that Andy Larson, who is a writer for the Salt Lake Tribune, what he posted is some possible guys are – this is just some list, but Damari Carroll, Jared Dudley, Jamichael Green, Mike Muscala, Mike Scott, Jeff Green, Noah Vonleh. So that's kind of the range I think where Utah's looking at as far as filling out the roster. Plus, they could buy either a first-round pick or a second-round pick, move up from 53 is where they're at in the draft spot right now.
Mm-hmm.
And also, they could trade Favors for something, you know. I don't think that'll happen.
Trade Favors or, you know, just decline his option and then you get all that cap space left. I can't, Basketball Reference, the last time I checked at least, they hadn't updated the salary cap situation, so I can't see exactly how much. But I think with Mike Conley, even if you do cut Derek Favors, I don't think you really would have a whole lot of cap space. So I do think, like you said, it'd probably be a trade so somebody else could decline his option as opposed to the Jazz just doing it.
Yeah, and this is a good segue into the Lakers, actually. But the trade actually won't happen until July 6th, because if it happens then Utah can take on Mike Conley's salary cap as part of their free agency money. So that's what, like, it's salary cap-wise is going to make the trade work, which is something the Jazz and the Grizzlies were aware of. But you know who wasn't aware of that rule, Matt?
Who's that?
Rob Pelinka was not aware of that rule.
That doesn't sound like him.
They don't have enough cap space. So Anthony Davis got traded from New Orleans to the Lakers for Josh Hart, Lonzo Ball. Who's the third guy? Shoot. Brandon Ingram. Duh. Brandon Ingram. Three first-round picks and one or two pick swaps as well in the future. So the issue, though, is because right now the trade is set to happen before the – like July 6th, then the Lakers, they're not going to have enough cap room because Anthony Davis can't count as like toward the cap room. He's going to count as like part of the team cap room that's already existing. So the Lakers aren't going to have enough cap room for a second slot. So they're trying to delay the trade, but New Orleans doesn't have to do that. So New Orleans might get another player out of this.
Well, I mean, just based on the things that New Orleans owner has said, you'd think that she, you know, has enough goodwill towards the Lakers where she'd want to make that happen, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that was a joke.
If you're not aware, she, before they hired David Griffin, said that she would trade Anthony Davis to the Lakers over her dead body. So she's not going to be particularly keen to help them out.
Yeah, so I'm excited, you know, interested to see what happens there. Also, how do you not know the salary cap rules? Like, I don't, but I don't work for the, like, get paid to work for the, like, make that decision for the Lakers, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, and the other thing is, and Bobani Jones made this point, if you were, like maybe a coach or, like, working on the college level or something like that, maybe you could excuse it. Not really though, but like maybe it's your first year, you know, everybody makes those sorts of mistakes. He was an agent before this, so he needed to know that this stuff as an agent too.
Yeah.
So it's not like he wasn't in the field or anything.
And he was Kobe Bryant's agent. He knew, he didn't know his stuff, but he like was good at being an agent, good enough to A, work for Kobe Bryant and B, get hired by the Lakers. So that's the biggest thing.
Oh, yeah.
And another thing with the Anthony Davis trade, Matt, is their roster. So they got Anthony Davis, LeBron James, Kyle Kuzma. I'm just assuming they get a Kemba Walker or a Jimmy Butler or even a Tobias Harris, you know, but I'm assuming they get another free agent. But after that, you got Mo Wagner. I don't know. Can Magic Johnson suit up? Like, Rondo, like a couple second round draft picks, like they're not going to have a team. Is what I'm like. Everyone's saying they're their favorites, I mean, and Anthony Davis and LeBron James are going to be great together. But like, I need to see like how they fill out their roster.
Well, yeah, and the like offensively, I'm a little bit less worried than I think some people are, just because, like you said, Anthony Davis and LeBron James are going to be pretty hard to stop. Although they're certainly going to be tired, particularly LeBron James. But like, how are they going to play defense? You know what I mean? Because LeBron stopped playing defense a couple years ago because he needs to conserve his energy. Anthony Davis is a really, really good defender. But, like, you're not getting good defenders out of the second round, you know? If someone, like, really is that good of a defender that they can play without their offensive game, they usually can move into, like, the 20s or, like, even, like, the late 20s. So their defense is going to be atrocious.
Yeah, well, yeah, because the thing with that skill, Matt, like, if you're that good of a defender, NBA coaches have the NFL syndrome. Like, you know, we can coach them into shooting. And obviously, it's way more extreme in the NFL. But, like, if you're a good enough athlete and, like, you at least have good form, like, and you can defend, they're going to take you in the first round. So, yeah. You're right on
that. So yeah, that I don't think is really going to work. I don't think that was a problem necessarily with the Anthony Davis trade. I just think they didn't really, you know, set the team up really well before this. I like it actually a lot for the Pelicans. I'm not crazy about any of the guys that they sent over there, but that's a lot of draft picks that the Pelicans got. Well, and especially because the Lakers, you know, I think they've got 2 years tops where they're going to be good. And then after that, it kind of feels like they're going to be garbage again. And so they're going to be getting not just all those Lakers picks. They're going to be really, really high picks.
New Orleans is the new Boston in terms of most assets. Yeah. And yeah, another interesting. So New Orleans has the number one pick in the draft, which is tomorrow. So you might've already, that might've happened by the time we listen to this, but the Lakers traded them the fourth overall pick in this year's draft. So they're either getting two top four picks this year, or they can trade that number four pick for future picks. Like, well, they have a ton of options, so they could get even more picks out of this.
Yeah. So, yeah, and that, you know, honestly, with all those young guys that they've got, that might be smart as to bring in, like, a good veteran player, like I heard somebody talking about Bradley Beal, but he's a free agent. So that doesn't really make sense. But like that type of player, I think would be really interesting.
Yeah, for him. I heard Beal because I thought Beal had a couple more years on his contract. Still,
I thought. Let me look it up. I was pretty sure he was a free agent, but you're probably right because we both heard people talking
about. Yeah, so they get Beal. I think he's 25 right now. So they could get Beal. They could get some future first round picks. So, yeah, they have a ton of options. And David Griffin just keeps walking into these dope situations with, like, an incredible player, the number one draft pick. Like, if I'm picking a GM, like situations to be in, David Griffin's is going to be high on my list.
It's pretty good, yeah.
And then the – did you find the Bradley Beal thing that we can talk about Boston?
Yeah, he's got
one more year, so right in the middle. Right in the middle. So yeah, Matt, let's talk about Boston. First of all, we knew Kyrie was going on from Boston for a while. I think just to recap quickly, he in August at an event, he and in the Boston like Garden, he said, "If you'll have me, I'm planning on resigning next year." Then the season happened and stuff went south in I think January, February. He's like, "I don't know anybody, anything." It was in New York when he said that, and the Knicks were one of the teams rumored to get him. And then he's been basically ghosting the Celtics for the last couple of weeks. So millennial free agency is upon us, Matt.
Yeah, I mean, sounds a little bit familiar how we just didn't hear anything about Gordon Hayward. So, yeah, ghosting definitely isn't a good sign. That doesn't mean that your player is going to come back. But then, you know, So you've heard me talk about this. I'm a big Al Horford guy. I think Al Horford is really, really good. And so him leaving, I think, is going to be very problematic.
Yeah, I think, yeah. So Oh, this is even funnier than the Kyrie thing. So Al Horford, everybody was like, oh, he's going to opt in. Because I think it was like a $30 million opt-in. It was $25 to $30 million, somewhere in that range. So everybody's like, oh, he's going to opt in because it's that much money. Then he was like, oh, he's going to opt out. And that was then he's like, oh, he's going to sign a long-term contract with the Celtics. You know, a team-friendly deal to help Boston out. He's a team player. And then, Celtics fans. And then he's the reports come out that the negotiations are too far apart between Boston and Al Horford, and he's rumored to already have a contract set up with another team. So all these Boston people, fans and reporters talking about like either he's going to opt in or he's going to opt out to sign like a longer term deal to stay in Boston. They just didn't even cross their mind that Al Horford would leave too. And it's just so funny how everything is like happening right now in Boston.
Can you imagine if 3 years ago someone told you that in 3 years Gordon Hayward was going to play for the Celtics but be terrible, Al Horford was going to leave, and Kyrie Irving was going to leave, even though they were playing with all this young talent and probably had the most depth in the NBA?
Unbelievable. And my,
they had the best situation I'd even heard
of. No, it is. And another thing to add to the situation is our guy, Gordon Hayward. ESPN's Jackie McMullen came out with a report that said part of the strife or the contention in the locker room started when what's his last name? I can't believe I'm spacing on this.
Stevens.
How did I space on that? When Brad Stevens, he was force-feeding Gordon Hayward the ball to try to get his confidence back from the injury. And, you know, I don't know Brad Stevens. I assume he would have done that with any player. But because Gordon Hayward played at Butler with him, because they had that history, it was taking his favoritism. And then that kind of started the contention. And the season went downhill from there. So Gordon Hayward, A, wasn't playing good at all. But because Brad Stevens kept trying and trying and trying to make him part of the offense, there were too many mouths to feed in Boston this year. Especially, everyone thought last year's playoff success with all the young guys, and then you bring back Kyrie and Gordon Hayward was going to be beneficial. But that's actually what ended up screwing Boston this year, because Jason Tatum and Brown and the young guys were like, we did it without them. And Kyrie's like, I'm a top 3 or 5 point guard in the league. Give me the ball. And Hayward's trying to come back from an injury. There's just so much going on, and Ian Brad Stevens couldn't really handle it.
Yeah, that is. Man, I don't think they're going to fire Danny Ainge. But like, he should feel really, really uncomfortable about the way this is all unfolded.
Yeah. So I'm interesting. Boston, I think, becomes the most interesting team in free agency. What's funny, like the way the math worked out salary cap wise, they're losing two of their best, three players with Horford and Kyrie, top three. And they only have enough room to get one max guy back. I don't know who that's going to be, Matt. If it's D'Angelo Russell, if it's Tobias Harris, it's definitely not someone as good as Kyrie Irving. And I don't know how they're replacing Al Horford either. Because you're a big Horford guy, but he did a lot for them that is undervalued or underappreciated in their defense and their offense.
Yeah, like he was the reason that they were able to beat the Sixers so well, is because he would just dominated Embiid, was so good on him defensively, and then also offensively, it was just so different than most other centers that a lot of people really, really struggle to guard him, and a lot of their offense runs through him. So like, I mean, you wait and see what happens with free agency. They still, you know, they've got that Memphis pick that they can trade. They can do some things, but right now, like, I think they're still in the playoffs, but they're like a 6 or a 7 seed in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, I have no idea what's going to happen with Boston, honestly. So that's the thing. I'm excited to see what they do. I'm excited to see that other piece or couple pieces. The thing with the Lakers, if you add two pieces, then you're really cutting down on the quality of the pieces. Then you divide it by three to try to get depth on your roster, and you're going for, like, piece one's like Kemba Walker. Two guys, you can maybe get, like, J.J. Redick and someone else. But if you're getting three, you're in, like, the Garrett Temple, Damari Carroll type guys. So it's really – free agency is as good or better than the regular season, honestly.
Yeah, no, this is going to be a real, real fun.
Yeah, so I'm excited. And then next week again, so we're going to talk right now, World Cup's going on. Copa America is going on. Chile beat Japan 4-0. So next week we're going to talk about all that. We're also going to have, I think, working on the schedule, but we're going to try to get Joey Lancelotti, pitcher from the University of North Carolina, on the show. We've been texting about scheduling, so if we can get that down, he's going to come on the show. We'll do some soccer. Then in a couple weeks after that, I'll be right prime free agency. So we might just do a whole episode on that. We'll see how the soccer is going and the timing and everything. But that's kind of the schedule for the next couple weeks. Which we usually don't have this scheduled far out. There's just like a lot going on right now.
I know. Yeah. More than, you know, had a couple of rough, the beginning of June was hard. Now it kind of picks up and then we'll go into August and then it'll be a little slower again.
Yeah. But, yeah, so I'm excited. So make sure to check it out again. It's on Apple, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and Audio Boom. 5-star reviews, only subscribe rate review. Appreciate Paige Kuhn again from Bleacher Report coming on. Matt, glad to have you back. From the wedding, missed you. That first half of the show. It was a lot of me rambling. A lot of me rambling. Paige did a great job. And anything else before we close?
I don't think so. If you haven't seen Tiana Endler play keeper for Chile, you should definitely try to tune in to watch Chile. Because they're in a position to make it into the next round as well, because they're sending four third place teams in. So yeah, these final games in the Women's World Cup are going to be fun to tune into.
The USA plays tomorrow, if I'm not mistaken, or Thursday. Is that right?
Maybe
they play later. I went to Copa America, the Women's World Cup.
Yeah, so that is tomorrow. And because Scotland and Argentina tied, that was, I believe, what we wanted to happen. Yeah, so basically, for Chile to get through, they need to... I think they need to win, and they're playing Thailand, which seems probable. But yeah, if they win, and as long as like New Zealand or Cameroon don't beat the other one by like 4 goals, then Chile should get in. But what you're hoping for is for Cameroon and New Zealand to tie, and for Chile to beat Thailand by 3 or 4 goals. And when I say what you're hoping for, that's assuming that you're cheering for Chile, so you get to watch more of Tiana Endler, which is like, so like I tweeted out that they should, Real Salt Lake should get her to replace Nick Raimondo when he retires. And that's only like 70% kidding. I think she could kind of hold her own more than like any other women's keeper I've ever seen.
Yeah. So I'm excited. I honestly love watching that. So I'm excited. So everybody check that out, and we will talk to y'all next week.